all of our favorite characters were 105% predictable. Mm-hmm. And we are about to wreck the apple cart.
Yeah.
With this one, because you just opened up after, I'm 100% sure you picked Kaladin in every single other book. And you didn't even think about it.
That's what I was going to say. Or were we 4 for 4 for Dalinar, Kaladin, Zeth in that order of like the three of us?
Must have been.
Welcome back to Following Know It On, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 272, and we are in Wind and Truth. We are doing our wrap-up episode, doing some brief thoughts on the entire book. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great, Trevor. I don't think we've ever had brief thoughts, to clarify. Yeah,
last week proved that full 4 hours of content last week.
If you're listening to this after what was probably our longest night of just recording. You know, we've had nights that maybe, I don't know, something happens, someone's internet cuts out, we reconvene or something. But like just basically 4 hours of talking through the book, that's probably our new record.
Probably.
So not one for brief thoughts, but certainly one for lots of thoughts. So yeah, excited to go through, finally look at this book as a whole. I feel like we've talked so much about chapters and moments isolated, and now we get to look back retroactively at the whole thing.
The trouble for me here, before I throw it to Elliot, there have been several points throughout this book where we've said it really depends on where this is going for me to be able to talk about this fully. And I think the problem for me is I still feel that way about some of the plot points. Elliot, how are you?
I am well. I think I'm going to coin the term Stormlight hangover. I'm sure there's probably like a term already, but I think I'm in Stormlight hangover. I'm still just processing and recovering from this brick, this massive, massive book. It didn't even dawn on me, I think, just how far we've come until I started going back today and sorting through my notes of all these episodes of the like nearly 50 episodes, not quite that much, 40 episodes that we've done to cover this book. There's stuff that's happened at the beginning of this book that I have completely forgotten about already. And going back and reading through my notes was like, oh, wait, that happened. And having to come down off of the end of the journey that was Wind and Truth is a bittersweet feeling, I think.
Sounds good. All right, a little bit of format for anyone who is just now joining us or hasn't joined us for one of our wrap-up episodes before. We have some criteria that we will rate the book for. We'll go into some general thoughts and some favorite characters, favorite quotes, and then we'll kind of zoom out even further and just do some general discussion topics on a couple different topics that either we haven't gotten to or didn't talk enough about on this book specifically. Some of you have put in discussion requests, and the majority of those that we received are on Stormlight as a whole, understandably so, or Stormlight to come, which all three of us are quite excited about. We will not be covering that today. This is strictly on Wind and Truth, our thoughts on this book specifically and how it played out. That said, with my ratings, I'll go ahead and start us, unless Paul, you had something to chime in here.
I do. Trevor, you're ridiculous. Okay, you can continue.
Thank you. There are several plots and characters in this book where I feel like the story is far from over, and it's clearly so. And I tried not to let that be reflected in my criteria of this book, but I only have what's in these pages to go off of. So I think this book took quite a hit for some things that aren't in the book rather than some things that are in the book. So with that said, I'm going to go through my ratings really quick. I'll throw it to my two podcast co-hosts, and then we will discuss it as a group after our ratings. Here we go. We rate it on plot, characters, world building, theme, and point of view for a final score, all out of 10 for final score out of 50. For my plot, I gave it a 5 out of 10. Characters, I gave an 8. World building, I gave a 9. Theme, I gave an 8. And point of view, I gave a 10. Paul?
All right. Yeah, as Trevor said, we're going to break this down more. But to run through my ratings, I have plot actually as a 6. Characters as a 10. World building, a 10. Theme, a 7. Point of view, a 9. With a total score of 42 out of 50.
And on my end of things, I'm going to match, Paul, your score of 42 out of 50, but with a slightly different distribution. In plot, I gave it a 7. Characters, a 9. World building, a 9. That's actually one of the most shocking ones for me. Theme, an 8. And point of view, 9. 42.
Okay. A solid 4 stars out of 5 for each of us. Paul, where do you want to start?
So I think the elephant in the room is plot. This has to be the lowest we've ever rated plot, certainly of a Stormlight book. Hey, like I don't think any others. I haven't looked back at all of our previous ratings, but I'm guessing that none of them were in the 5, 6, 7 category. I know that for a fact. And the main thing I have to say is this is the hardest thing for me to rate with this book. As we talked about in our last episode, kind of coming to grips with this book is number five of 10 rather than number 5 of 5 within the series. I did not rate this because I think my ratings are very honest and very true as to this story. Now thinking of it as a book 5 of 10, I think for me, some of the things that kind of faltered in the plot was some of the elements throughout the book felt more like busy work to me. Like if you're familiar with like school busy work, like something to do just to keep you busy rather than because it's fruitful to your learning or something like that. That's frankly how I felt throughout this book in a way. I think the aspect of these like wars in these different cities, I was back and forth on whether that was exciting. I'm like, yeah, what's a good high fantasy series without some good war, you know, some sieging and wars. But it never, it didn't hold a ton of weight for me. And as Trevor mentioned, there were some things that we were expecting to see in this book that we did not. Like I said, I'm coming to grips with those are going to happen. It's just in books 6 through 10, not in books 1 through 5, which is okay. That's not a problem. But I think there were a lot of things that I felt misled on in this book, and I felt took up valuable real estate that wasn't needed, in my opinion. So what are y'all's thoughts on the plot? We all had different ratings and probably for different reasons. But I think overall, to me, it felt unclear as to what the plot of this book was. So much of it was this contest of champions. And then to me, it didn't feel so much like a contest of champions in a way. I don't know. I'll pass it to either of y'all, whoever wants to chime in. But obviously, plot is the elephant in the room. The others, I think we still rated very akin to the other books, very similar ratings. Plot was kind of the one that has gotten quite controversial, I guess, and maybe might be a shock to people listening, or it might not be. You might have rated similarly, people who are listening.
Yeah. So the point that you just said that I felt most akin to was I felt misled in some sections of this book. And what I mean by that is this book was so compartmentalized and so different, so many different plot lines going at the same direction And some of them hit great. Don't get me wrong. Like, if I had to rate different plots in as different scores, I would rate some of them as 10s and some of them as 2s. I feel like there's just so many, there's so much variability that I had to average a 5. That there's a lot of great plot in this book, but there's a lot of like confusing, odd inclusions. And not that I felt poorly about them as they came, but as the book ended, I'm like, well, hold on, wait a minute. What about this? What about, where were we going with this? You clearly built this to something, and it's not in this book, which I wish I could be fine with, but it was so clearly pushed on this will have a resolution, and it just doesn't.
I want to add one thing. You're right, Trevor. And what I've talked about some other, I finally get to talk with my like other friends and people who I know who have read the book now, which is exciting. And I don't remember in retrospect, because we were blinded by excitement and readiness for this book to release. We were at Dragonsteel Nexus, got to get the book in our hands. Everything was super exciting. How was this book marketed? It's always said book 5 of the Stormlight Archive. Once again, I feel like I've always thought of this as book 5 of 5 being Era 1 Stormlight, the back half being Era 2 Stormlight loosely. And yeah, it didn't... I don't know if that was something I was misunderstanding or if that's something everyone was expecting and that was low-key like a fumble on marketing's part or what. I'm moving past that, but that's how I felt going into this book. And so I think we were, and I imagine many other people, judging by some friends I've talked to and things, were expecting some resolution or at least more resolution. So yeah, anyways, just chiming in, I almost feel like it was the marketing of the book being perceived as one that would finalize some things, finalize more things, rather than being another middle book. So anyways, Elliot still has to talk about plot. He rated plot higher than we did, so maybe he'll have some nice things to say which will change our minds as well. Yeah,
I'll take it and maybe swing in a slightly rosier direction a little bit. I did rate this lower, a couple of steps lower than any other Stormlight book. The lowest I've done on a previous Stormlight book was 9. Now I'm going 7.
That's crazy.
It did feel like a step down for a lot of the reasons you guys were saying. I think it was a little bit, I don't know if jumbled is the right word, maybe not quite as well planned out as maybe some of the other ones, that it got a little lost at times. I think there were segments in the middle and the beginning of the book that, like I think you were saying, Trevor, you look back on them and they mean a lot less now. It kind of wasn't as impactful as you thought it might have been in the moment. So I took it down a little bit from there. But all that said, there's a lot of good moments in this book. There are a lot of cool plot driven character discovering themselves, facing a challenge, coming up with creative ways to solve it, elements of this book for just about all of our characters. And I still really enjoyed that. You just almost have to maybe take those scenes as standalone or kind of extract them a little bit from the larger picture, which might be slightly muddled, and say, man, this moment here with Kaladin and Zeth is really cool. Or this moment here with Taln and Adolin, super cool. This moment where Shallan forgives her mother, amazing. You know, so many cool little nuggets that I couldn't take it below 7 because there was still a lot of good.
All right. Into characters, I give it an 8. Paul gave it a 10. Elliot gave it a 9. I'm going to start with my 8. I almost always give Sanderson books a 10 out of 10 for characters. I think his characters and his world building hands down, are his strong suits. He has proven time and time again that he knows how to write good characters in good scenes. And I've said this for many other books, that I always feel like the characters are real and they say what they would as a real person. That if you put Wit and Kaladin and Dalinar in the same room having a conversation, they have the same worries and discussions and issues with each other that I feel like they would have if they were real people. I think Sanderson does a great job with that. There are a couple misses in this book, though. There's a couple misses that I feel like there's a couple characters that don't act themselves. And so I docked it 2 points because of that. For example, I think Yasna's a little weird in this book. I think Hoid's a little weird in this book. And I have one more. Maybe it'll come to me. Who wants to take it? I'll throw it, and then I'll remember my third in a second here.
Yeah, I'll go next. So I had characters as a 10, and I somewhat see what you mean, Trevor. I think for the most part, it's still pretty consistent there. I think you could chalk some of the, at least I can chalk a lot of these things up to, characters are certainly under a lot of stress in this book, but a 10 on characters for me in this book is because these characters are awesome, and I love following these characters. Any book in the Cosmere, Stormlight has been my favorite. Like, it kind of stands head and shoulders above the rest. It's like, yeah, I love the Cosmere, but I love the Stormlight Archive, has been my attitude. And that's largely to do with these characters. I mean, I really can't hardly pick a character that I don't like. There are characters I don't love, you know, but I mean, characters I just adore. Kaladin, Shallan, Dalinar, the main cast is so solid. Zeth, Hoid, Renarin, Adolin, like the list goes on and on and on about the characters that I think are so good that I couldn't bring myself to bring it lower than a 10. There might be moments that aren't perfect in this book, but I love the characters that we get to watch and go through this book with. So it was an easy 10 for me.
I better stop going last, because I'm just going to echo all of your guys' thoughts. I had a lot of the same thoughts and just kind of came out in the middle of you guys with a 9 on characters. I will say, I do think the characters carry this book. And that's true of a lot of Sanderson. He writes really good characters. And even in the parts of this book where it's a little bit confusing, or you're getting a little lost, or maybe the plot lets you down a little bit, there's still a character that you have got to know what happens to next. Like, you have to keep turning those pages, because there's at least somebody that you are so invested in that you need to know what happens. And that, I think, is indicative of really strong characters. So 9. I couldn't quite go to a 10 because this book had a lot of characters, and I think some suffered. And I think we didn't get to see as much of some of the characters in the way we could have if maybe we'd been a little more focused. I might bring this up later in my general thoughts, but there were times in this book where we went 60 pages without revisiting one of our main POVs, like a Kaladin. You would see Kaladin, and then you would go 60 pages of 6, 7, 8, 9 other points of view before you get back to Kaladin. And that just makes it a little hard maybe to stick with the character journeys that were going on. But I think that's a minor thing. I'm maybe making it sound a little scarier than I intended it to be. Solid 9 out of 10.
I forgot to mention, I docked a full point on characters because Adolin didn't get to talk to his dad. I haven't forgiven Sanderson about that. And I have docked a full point for that.
Wow.
Isn't that a plot thing, not a characters thing?
I don't know if I could give the plot a 4 out of 10, so I docked it in characters.
Okay. Carryover docking.
Right. Collateral damage.
Yeah, okay, fine. They are next to each other, so I guess anyways. Elliot, you should probably lead us on world building, shouldn't you? I feel like you always have a lot to say on world building.
I do want to take this first, so I can get all my thoughts out before you guys steal them all. So world building, here we go. This one, I actually thought hard about this one, and I shocked myself a little bit. Every previous Stormlight book for me has been a 10 in world building, and I didn't think about it for more than a half a second. Wind and Truth is not a 10 in world building. And I'm shocked with myself because Brandon is so good at this. He is phenomenal when it comes to his world building. It just comes like second nature to him. I think I'm expanding on this more in my general thoughts of kind of my take on the whole book. This book was tougher to get through because we didn't learn nearly as much about the world as we have in previous books. I think the way I was putting it together in my mind is that thinking about the score, the world is amazing. The building was not really there in this book. So the world building gets a 9 out of 10 just because everything he's built up to in this point, we're getting to see in full effect, which is super cool. But some of those extended longer periods where it's slower, there's not as much action. In all the other books, Rhythm of War, Way of Kings, all of those, you are getting these lore dumps. You're bored because you're sitting and just listening to Jasnah talk to you, but oh my goodness, you're learning so much. And I didn't really get that in this book, like at all. There's a few big reveals. There's a few big reveals, but there's never a extended sequence where Brandon's building something up for me, where he's teaching me about the world. We just didn't go there. We shouldn't go there in that book. And that might be intentional because he's trying to make this the big payoff with all the events and the plots. He's trying to lean maybe heavier into the plot, which is rough because that's kind of where we docked him, was some of that fell through for us. But I think world building got sacrificed a little bit along the way. So I had to go with a 9.
I think I'll remain our middle guy here, as in going second, not in my rating, because my rating was still a 10. This may be a naive rating for me, but I can't not rate world building a 10 when we spent so much time seeing and learning and experiencing the spiritual realm on Roshar. I do see what you mean, Elliot. You make a great point, like logically, but for me, the hype and the depth of understanding that I've gotten about how these three realms work together by getting to go to and see the spiritual realm is so good and so cool. So this is my other 10 out of 10 was for world.
I give it a 9, and I docked it simply because I think we spend too much time in the spiritual realm. There was maybe 3 or 4 too many flashback point of views sitting in our previous past and just talking. They didn't learn anything specifically from the room they were in. They just sat in their childhood room talking. And it was really odd to me. So I put that in world building, that there was a miss there. I was a big fan of Shinovar. We didn't know nearly anything about Shinovar up until this point, which is intentional, and we get to fully dive into Shinovar. I was a big fan of that. And then the honor tapes, as we've called them, I was a big fan of going to visit old Roshar. And it's just those middle spiritual realm, like sitting and chatting with Renar and Relaine and Shallan, that I felt like there was something, some real sustenance missing there. It kind of felt like filler to me because it didn't really go anywhere for me. But there you go. There's 9 out of 10. All right, we'll throw it to Elliot again for theme.
Theme, I can keep it brief here. I've said this a bunch now. I'm going to talk later about what my actual theme is for the book that I had. I rated 8 out of 10, just at a general kind of high level on my 8 out of 10 for theme. There was a lot of really good themes throughout. I gave a theme for every single day that we read, because in previous books, I've given kind of a my takeaway theme for each part. Well, this book had 10 parts, so I had to do 10 different kind of takeaway themes from those. And I brought the score down a little bit just because there were so many. There wasn't so much of a common thread throughout the whole book. It wasn't quite as succinct as previous books had been. I was getting some really good stuff out of various sections of the book, but it wasn't quite hitting me as hard as when there are multiple elements, different plot lines that all kind of come together into something at the end of the day that really hits you hard, like an Oathbringer or Rhythm of War actually did that for me really well. So 8 out of 10 for theme.
I'll go next real quick because I'm going to say the exact same thing. There was a lot of good, very minimal great. There was no like one or two scenes where I stay up at night thinking about Dalinar's dialogue or stay up at night thinking about Kaladin's actions. And I've done that on every book up until now. And my main takeaway, I think my main like big theme for the book was Navani talking to Dalinar right before he goes to the Contest of Champions. That type of scene is what I'm talking about. May be the only great scene of go up there, be Dalinar, we trust you, make the right decision. That is something I can take away from into my own life of it doesn't matter how high the stakes are, trust your judgment, you know how to fight this because you're you. That was a great segment, maybe the only one for me. There might be another one, which I'll get back into my favorite quotes later in the episode, but Paul, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm also going to try not to ruin your quote, Trevor, that you're going to share, but I feel pretty polarized on this. My rating is one lower than the two of y'all. I have a 7 out of 10 for theme. There are some themes in this book that are great, excellent. To name them, I think the foremost one for me is the theme of forgiveness throughout this book. On Shallan, Zeth to himself, maybe. Some characters like that provide excellent examples of forgiveness when it's hard, whenever it's painful. Excellent. That alone, that's a 10 out of 10 theme that I love. I think there are some other good ones, and I'm not going to name them because I know we're going to talk about them later, and I don't want to spoil that discussion. But I think the other themes that were attempted to be shown in this book don't hold water. I think notably there's a big element that comes up about truth. Like truths and lies have been an ongoing thing and but some of the stuff with that felt a bit rocky and didn't really like have much payoff and didn't hold much water. Also with what's it called? There was another major theme. I don't remember, but there were several themes like that. Like I think truth and and law. I briefly mentioned law, but the whole becoming the law thing. I feel like some of that fell flat and doesn't hold much water outside of the context of the book. So that's why theme is lower for me in this one.
Do you want to start us for point of view?
Yeah, absolutely. Point of view I have is a 9. I think the point of view in this book is awesome and exciting. We get to see a lot of characters, we've wanted to see. We got like Tanavast point of view, like some really cool stuff that definitely wish list things. Point of views from our heralds, point of views from Tanavast, from Odium. Awesome stuff. Like if we're judging the scope of characters that get a point of view, 10. Easy. I docked it a point because Elliot briefly touched on this, but sometimes you go a long time between seeing characters, which that's not a problem. But for me, it can be hard to follow. It can be a bit jarring. My view on this may be different if I was reading straight through this book in like a week. But I think at times the previous books have felt jarring at the end whenever you're switching back and forth really fast. That felt to be consistent throughout the book. I love the point of views. They're just hard to manage. So I took a point off.
I'll jump right after you because I'm going to echo a lot of those thoughts. I also rated it 9. Also for the reasons you're talking about there, as I was going back through my notes, I found a comment that I made even as far back as chapter 11, where I was already noting man, the POVs are really diverse, which brings a lot of strength to the book, but also just makes it a little rough when you're reading slow, like us. There's just so many different plot lines I'm following, so many characters that I need to get emotionally invested in, and I'm not as much as I could because it's 2 weeks in between last time I saw this character on the page. I will say, though, it fully earns its 9 out of 10 for me, because if a book is 1,300 pages long and it can keep your attention that whole way, I think that is a strong testament to the point of view, which I kind of define as the how you're experiencing the book through the characters that you are reading about. And even in the parts where it wasn't quite as exciting, I think the point of view still carried us through because Brandon's really good at putting you in the eyes of his characters.
Yeah, I give it a 10 because I think I kind of use point of view as like format and how you learn information. And I think that was incredible in this book. The Tanavast chapters, some of the spiritual realm stuff, the old Zeth flashback stuff, how it fed right into the Ishar corruption stuff, all of those reveals and all of those payoffs worked for me in this book. And I don't know. Maybe I should actually go back to my wish list for this book because I have one and compare it. But I think it checked off quite a bit as far as like lore reveals. We were, you know, in Disneyland for lore reveals. We got one literally every page. So there is my final 40 out of 50, 42 out of 50 for both of you. All right, let's take this one point at a time, gentlemen. What were some general thoughts, good, bad, how you felt about it?
I think we've talked about this a bit all around, but I think my general overarching takeaway from this book was that there were some amazing moments. Like, to name a few, we have like Dalinar's learning and sacrifices, you know, Kaladin's patience, like throughout the book, Zeth's acceptance, you know, you could name something notable for each of the characters, you know, but it felt like there was maybe lackluster prioritization when we go into the weeds and when we kind of look closer. We've talked a lot about the ending surprising us with how everyone is still very unfinished. We were expecting finding a checkpoint for everyone, if that makes sense, a checkpoint to leave them at to pick up with at the next book, but we don't get that. And it kept me wondering because we were expecting that, and I think many people were expecting that, and it makes me wonder what a lot of some of the other times in this book we're doing. We set up a lot of characters, a lot of Yonagon and the other like girls and crew with Adolin. We had a lot of, you know, a lot of other things which I was excited for. Like, as we were reading, I was excited because I'm wondering where the big payoff for this is going to be. But I feel like the payoff was different in this book. It didn't feel like a... I always think of Brandon Sanderson as the master of payoff at the end of the book in The Sander Lynch. This book didn't have as much payoff for me. I'm overall on the side of, okay, well, I'll have to wait and see what happens next book, not, wow, that is an amazing ending to this book, you know? So I think that's my overarching thoughts over the whole book. There's good and not as good moments and things like that, but I think that's my real two cents on the book. I feel like I don't know if it tried to do too much or lost its way somewhere along the way or what. But I don't know. Something didn't feel quite right. I'm wondering if it was kind of the prioritization of things happening in this book.
I think there were a few other things that I felt were a little bit out of place in this book, but very different from what you're talking about, but maybe they're contributing to this. This felt a little bit, and I want to emphasize on the little bit out of character for Brandon. Not a lot of it out of character for Brandon. This is still very much a Stormlight book. It's still very much a really good book that I'm going to be excited to come back to again in the future. But there were some small things that I picked up along the way that just caused me to pause for a second and go, that's a little odd. One of them is swear words. Did you guys notice this? There were Earth swear words in this book. And I've not gone back and looked, so I don't know if I can definitively say that there were none in the previous ones of Stormlight. There are in other books, but they were noticeably absent for me in the past books because we had Roshar swear words and other Cosmere swear words. And then all of a sudden in this book, there were Earth swear words, and not a lot, but a few kind of mixed in there. And I was kind of like, huh, where did that come from? The other one was the intimate scenes. There were a few. They were very small and they were very mild and not a problem for me, but just a little bit of a, huh, that feels like a little bit of a step in a different direction with some of the Shallan and Adolin stuff. And there was like a Queen Fen scene, romance scene in there that just kind of felt, you know, oh, okay. I guess that kind of thing is in Stormlight now. Anyway, not big stuff, not red flags, just like small steps. It was like, what is this? Oh, and then another random one was there was more than one. I counted two. I think there's more little goofy shout outs to real world people. People like Isaac Stewart and Steve Argyle, like very obvious. I wouldn't call it an Easter egg because it's not hidden.
Is it more obvious because you now know who those people are? Or
probably
was it just,
yes.
Or was it just, or do you think it was properly hidden before?
I don't honestly know the answer to that question. I think I'd have to go back and read and see if those are buried in previous ones or not. I don't remember seeing them, but you're absolutely right. 6 month experience, Cosmere reader me is not going to notice that kind of thing. 5 year experience me going to notice it far more, but kind of getting yanked out of my immersion when Brandon throws a joke at Isaac Stewart in the middle of the page. Mm-hmm. I totally get what he's doing, but it just kind of contributes to the slightly little bit of taking me out of character.
To answer my own question, I do think it was pushing it and further out of character for Brandon, what he has done previously of. And then there was, you know, Stargyle. What a handsome guy that guy is. That guy's got great hair. Yeah. Moving on. And you're like, okay. I mean, like Steve Argyle's great hair. I get it.
And I want to be super clear, like that one little instance that I have no problem with that on its own, that single thing is that, do I have a problem with him putting that in the book? I don't think I do. But when you take all those little things and you add them all up together, some of the stuff that Paul's talking about, these little things I'm talking about, it felt like a little bit, again, emphasis on a little bit of a shift in how Brandon was approaching this. And it broke a little bit of my Stormlight immersion, a little bit.
Yeah, I would also add, so once again, I want to preface, I feel like the hot thing to talk about with this book and what we're talking about here are these things that didn't seem to add up for us. And I sure hope that the people who are listening, like everyone listening, doesn't think like, oh, we hated the book. Like, obviously, you know, you've if you're listening to this, you've been with us for a while, and you know, we did not. But there are things that I agree. I think you said it really well, and I hadn't put my finger on that, but there are specific things that feel out of place for the Stormlight Archive. Also, probably you're right, Trevor. There's probably things like this that might be in the other books, and we just didn't have the foreknowledge to spot them.
There are, yes.
But I think the one that bugs me the most, actually, was the Syl-Kaladin-hinted romance. Actually,
yeah, that was part of it for me,
and
too.
Some moments.
Are we going to talk about this?
I'll leave it at that. I won't go further, but I don't know. It some of these things felt out of place, and to me, it felt like trying to appeal to a different audience, which maybe that was his goal, and if so, maybe that worked. I don't know if it did or not. We're still very out of the loop. I've talked with some real life friends about what they thought about the book, but I haven't been up to date on people's thoughts on Wind and Truth overall, you know? So I'm out of the loop. I don't know. Maybe people loved it. Maybe people also didn't like it. I don't know. But there were things like that. And you're right, Elliot. None of these things on their own were a cause for concern. But all of them together didn't feel at home in what we have been. Because in my head, all the other Cosmere stuff is like the time for Brandon to explore. And for me, Stormlight feels like business. Like he's going for business. Like he is to the point. He is all the payoff, all the things. Like that's really the prime. Everything ultimately points back to that. That could be a wrong perspective I have of the Cosmere. But that's how I've been thinking through this, or how I felt of like, you know, you go to Mistborn Era 2 and some kooky stuff happens with like sports and whatnot and stuff like that. And that's fun and I like it and it's fun to read. But Stormlight has been my like, you know, all right, it's time to lock in and like, let's go into this deep fan, like this high fantasy like setting that is like these serious characters and things. So it felt a bit off. So yeah, I think that's the rest of my general thoughts. Y'all probably have more. I feel like I've been hijacking this whole segment, but yeah.
I don't disagree with anything that you guys just said. And I think it's really, let me put it this way. I think Sanderson tried to have this entire book be a Sanderlanch. I think the goal was, you read this in a week or 2 weeks. And we absolutely didn't do that. So a lot of these like minor misses that we're talking about stick out to us for 2 full weeks. Whereas other people don't remember them at all. Like they just remember the Contest of Champions at the end and running through the spiritual realm of breakneck pace and learning a bunch of cool stuff about Roshar and then the end. And then we took 307 days to read this book, and it's just a very interesting format thing that we put on ourselves. So, but it's really hard from my perspective to figure out what is our format's fault and what is the book's format's fault. So I'm a little torn on that.
I completely agree. I think that underlying a lot of my criticism for this book, which, as we often do in these chapters, we end up talking, kind of analyzing some of the parts we didn't like. There's still so much to love about this book. I really enjoyed it overall. But I think a theme running through a bunch of these things that I am not quite as satisfied with is that it is clear to me this book was intended to be binge read. It was written with that in mind. There are certain sections of this that I think are not intended to be picked apart.
And I think for 98% of the people who get to Stormlight 5 and read Stormlight 5 are doing that. And I think, right. So I think that's correct. I think you should be writing this for that format. You should be reading that in that format.
Right. Yeah. I think to experience this book the way Brandon intended is block out a week of your life and do nothing but.
Which is fair. I do want to still chime in. And once again, I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer. So what I think I've talked to, including my wife, Alex, who I can now finally talk about the book with, I've talked to like 3 or 5 friends who I know who've read the book, all of which who, whenever they picked it up, read it quickly. And their thoughts seemed to be the same as mine. I think I had one friend was like, had no complaints about the plot, liked that it's setting up for book 6 and onward, and wasn't surprised by that. But the other 4 were, and I think echoed our thoughts. So yeah, I don't know. Let us know what you think about that. Sure. I think we do have a unique perspective of having read this over 307 days, like you're saying. But I think the thoughts are still pretty unanimous, maybe.
For the record, I have a lot less issue with, as you put it, book 5 out of 10 as opposed to 5 out of 5, like a lot fewer loose ends tied up than you were hoping for. I'm fine with, but You've brought that up multiple times, and I completely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I have. For the record, that did not hurt my rating of the plot. I feel like if I were listening to me right now, I'd be like, that loser just docked it because it wasn't the fifth out of five books that he thought it was going to be. And I don't. That's not the case. But yes, it was a surprise. But I'm moving past it. I'm moving. I'm beyond that, I think.
I want to grab the mic real fast to actually praise Brandon on something very specific, because I've called him out on this in just about every single other book we've read.
Except for Yumi and the Nightmare Painter?
Except for probably Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. And maybe Sunlit Man had a lot of really good descriptions. So if you're a longtime listener of our podcast and you've listened to any more than one of our book summaries, you probably know that I always call Brandon out. I always dock him some points for his lack of descriptions. Please, Brandon, tell me what the world around me looks like. He does this so rarely. It's just not his style. He's a verb-driven, action-driven writer. He wants you to feel the emotions and live the action with your characters, not stop and take in the view. I, as a reader, love stopping and taking in the view. And he did more of that in this book, and I really enjoyed it. There were some key moments in this book where we got a fully descriptive paragraph, or we just got some really descriptive explanations of what was going on. I pulled up an example just to show it. Sometimes it can be just a single sentence, but this is towards the end, in the middle of the Sanderlanch, where Kaladin and Zeth are battling against Nightblood, who he's like destroying the world and melting everything. And there's a moment where Kaladin like picks himself up off the ground, and Brandon describes it like this. Kaladin, feeling like the crusted stuff on the inside of a cauldron after a stew got burned, trudged across the empty field and knelt beside Syl. Like, boom. I can now perfectly imagine how Kaladin feels, because I've scraped crusty stuff off the bottom of my skillet after letting it sit too long and burn. Like, yes, thank you. More of that. More of that. It was really well done in this book.
There's even a fun scene where it describes them like looking out. Like, I think near the beginning of the book, Kaladin and Dalinar and like looking, like floating up above and looking at it. Like, yes, it's similar energy, at least, of like getting a picture of where they are. And that they're simply just looking around, you know? So that's a good point.
Elliot, do you have a theme for the whole book? You have it on our outline here.
Yeah, let's hit that real fast. So as I talked briefly in my rating for theme, there wasn't as much of a consistent one throughout. There's a lot of different ones. My themes of each day that we talked, each part of the book, varied wildly. I had some that were like self-actualization. I had others that were reckoning. I had others that were strategy, like all over the place. But what is the big one that kind of spoke to me the most throughout the whole book? And again, this is very personal to me. This is not, you know, me saying this is the theme you should take away from the book. This is just very much kind of what I walk away with. And I couldn't not pick forgiveness as the theme, because I thought that was the theme that spoke the strongest in a few brief moments. And you see it, I think, the most with Shallan and her mother. That was really impactful for me, that segment where Shallan, at her wedding, gets to interact with her mother and forgive her for the terrible things that she'd done in her life. And then we see it again with Dalinar and Tanavast. Dalinar spends a lot of time in the spiritual realm learning about Tanavast and watching him fall apart as he's battling with honor, kind of not in sync with his shard. And there's a big moment before we get into the biggest moments at the end where Dalinar looks to the Stormfather and says, I forgive you. I think Zeth goes on very much a forgiveness path. It's maybe not quite spelled out so much, but he's done a lot of crap in his life and he's having to bear that weight. And by the end of the book, I think he gets to a point where he can actually accept himself. He can actually move forward, make decisions, live for himself. And I think there's a forgiveness aspect of that. And then, Trevor, you docked the whole book a point for this, but Adolin gets to a forgiveness point with Dalinar.
I was going to mention that Adolin is a stronger arc than any of the ones you've mentioned so far.
Yep, he's a big one. And he doesn't get to talk to Dalinar about it, but he gets that's kind of Adolin's big moment in this. That's his pinnacle moment in this book, is being able to wrestle with kind of accepting that he doesn't have to be perfect and his father doesn't have to be perfect, and he can accept that. And then the book even ends on it. The very last sentence of the book, well, it's like three or four sentences from the end, is Taln forgiving the other heralds for abandoning him in Damnation. And while not the most prevalent plot line throughout the entire book, I feel like it bookends the series well. I feel like it summed up Wind and Truth for me. So I think the most powerful moments in here that I got were the forgiveness moments.
It's really good. Thank you. I'm going to move into our favorite characters because mine ties right into that. My favorite character for the book was Dalinar, with an honorable mention of Adolin. And if Adolin had gotten his moment at the end of the book, it probably would have been. But he didn't, so it's Dalinar.
So Trevor, I want to stop you right there and just say, I think probably every other Stormlight book so far, all of our favorite characters were 105% predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And we are about to wreck the apple cart.
Yeah,
with this one, because you just opened up after, I'm 100% sure you picked Kaladin in every single other book, and you didn't even think about it.
That's what I was going to say. Or were we 4 for 4 for Dalinar, Kaladin, Zeth in that order of like the three of us?
I think we must have been.
Yeah, surely. I think in Rhythm of War, I think at the end of that was when Adolin was my favorite.
Okay.
But yeah, Zeth has been a big favorite of mine, but spoiler, he's not.
All right.
But Trevor, you just opened it up and stole mine with Dalinar.
Well, okay. But let me put this out there.
Go ahead. Yeah.
The Dalinar stuff I can get into in a second. But Kaladin's my default, obviously. Kaladin probably is still my favorite character of all five. But he didn't do much in this book. That's my hot take.
All right.
Except for, you know, save all the sprints. No. He didn't do that much. He, you know, waltzed over his fifth ideal. He's like, yeah, that wasn't a big deal for me.
He only traveled with and saved Zeth throughout the entire book after being sent on a quest and invited to be the heir for Dalinar. Uh-huh. And then he goes, therapizes Zeth, helps him out, basically becomes like a brother, sees him as Tien.
So what you're saying is
goes and saves Ishar, says his fifth ideal, becomes a herald, and you're like, yeah, he didn't really do much this book.
So what you're trying to tell me, Paul, is the best part of Kaladin's plots are other characters. The best parts of Kaladin are Dalinar, Zeth, and Ishar.
As was made apparent last book, when he was moved from a forefront role to a supportive role.
True.
Yeah. Which I was expecting to remain your favorite, because you're always like, yeah, I want this obscure character who just was in the background in this scene and supported the other characters.
Yeah, Damu is my favorite character in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, he is in this book, so you could pick him again.
He is technically in this book.
Yeah.
No. Dalinar is my favorite character for all the obvious reasons. He lays down his life, not only in defense of Roshar, but in full confidence that the next generation can take up where he left off, gives his life to save Gavinor, who has been the greatest victim of this book. Of course, it's Dalinar. And Elliot, if you're going to be a contrarian and say someone else because I said Dalinar, you are incorrect, and your favorite character is Dalinar.
Oof, I feel like I have to go next because I've just been attacked directly. Oh my goodness. So I'm pretty sure I picked Dalinar every single book up till now. Maybe Navani snuck in last book because she was pretty fun in Rhythm of War. But yeah, Dalinar for the whole series, for sure, for me. He's my guy. The leadership aspects of it, the self-sacrifice, everything about Dalinar is awesome. But I didn't pick Dalinar for this book. And it felt obvious for some of the reasons that I feel like you just said about Kaladin, actually. I like Dalinar a lot. But and huge things happen in this book. Monumental, Cosmere-shattering kinds of things at the hands of Dalinar. He makes huge decisions in this book. The biggest moment I think we've seen in any Cosmere book yet happens at the hands of Dalinar. But all that said, I didn't feel like Dalinar as a character went on very much of a journey in this book. He had a moment where Odium was overwhelming him with all his past memories, and he resisted that. He could have capitulated right there and slid back into the Blackthorn, served Odium, could have been very different, and he didn't. He stood up, he resisted that, and chose to walk in the light and not in the darkness. But overall, Dalinar didn't do much in this book. You think Kaladin didn't do much. I think Dalinar didn't do much.
Who did more, Kaladin or Dalinar?
Both crazy.
who did more, Kaladin or Dalinar?
I think Kaladin did more.
Experienced and learned more? Because yeah. Kaladin learned and experienced this whole concept of therapy, to put it briefly, and supporting someone else and understanding how they think and how to help them mentally. That was all new stuff, I think, is what Elliot's getting at, right? That was a new journey for Kaladin, whereas this wasn't a new journey for Dalinar.
It feels a little wild to say, because of the whole Sunmaker's Gambit thing, the ramifications of that are going to impact every single Cosmere book we read from this point on.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, like...
No, there's no end yet.
No, there is.
The period. The Dalinar... Save the Cosmere, period.
I mean, yes, but the journey that he went on to get from Dalinar at the beginning of this book to the Dalinar who makes that decision was only about 4 chapters.
I hear you. No, that is true. Absolutely, that is true.
But
Kaladin also had that same problem of the Kaladin to start the book and the Kaladin to end the book is quite minimal, and Kaladin still didn't do anything with the end of the book.
I can't believe I'm sitting here and listen to each of you. You're Elliot arguing, saying Dalinar did nothing in this book, and Trevor arguing Kaladin did nothing in this book, back and forth at each. I'm glad this is going to be posted and published, hopefully eternalized, because this was not on my bingo board at all. So y'all keep going. Well, y'all keep going.
No, this is a pretty obvious conversation, because both of us want Kaladin and Dalinar to have all the page time, all the character focus, all the character moments, and like I said at the beginning of the book, the characters that we care about most have already arrived at their destination, and we're not going to get as much of them. I called that, and that is absolutely true of Dalinar and Kaladin, but Kaladin didn't do enough in this book.
I'm not going to pick a side on the Kaladin thing. I am going to die on the hill of the Dalinar thing. And we haven't even gotten to actually talking about
the Dalinar thing.
Uh-huh. Yep, got that.
Sorry.
And we haven't even mentioned the name once of the character that I am going to pick as my favorite character, because it's not Dalinar. It's not Kaladin. I'm going to steal Paul's homeboy and go Zeth. I think Zeth was my favorite character in this book. The flashbacks really had me engaged. I was a little disappointed, actually, by some of the wrap-up of his story. We talked about that a couple of episodes ago with his father. I think there was more there that I would really love to see. But I think it was Zeth, pretty clearly, for me. I liked his journey a lot, of him wrestling with, how do I know what the right thing to do is? And where he got to at the end of the book, I think, was really exciting.
I will chime in here real quick before Paul takes it. Zeth absolutely had the best theme of the book. His story meant the most, in that your decisions matter. What you decide right now, today, matters a lot. That doesn't make Zeth the best character or my favorite. All right, go ahead, Paul.
I thought you'd like him, Trevor, because he debonds 1-2, 1-2-4 auxiliary. I thought you'd be like, Zeth's my favorite because he kicked that miserable little guy to the curb. No.
Okay, hold on. 1-2, 1-2-4 just real briefly. My big issue with 1-2, 1-2-4 is I know for a fact I am not going to get to see the story of him changing from 1-2, 1-2-4 to auxiliary ever. That is never going to be a content piece ever. And that really bothers me, because auxiliary, like I've said, top 5 Cosmere characters ever. 1-2, 1-2-4 doesn't even make the list. I forgot to put him on the list. That's how insignificant he is.
All right. Yeah. It is funny going back to looking at the comments on that episode. Everyone in the comments is like, Trevor, you got to let it rest at this
Everybody
point.
Was happy to correct me. Thing.
Yeah. Rightfully so. Man, I feel like I've rubbed off maybe too much on Elliot choosing Zeth. That is, I was not expecting him to choose Zeth. Zeth's story is amazing. Funny enough, what really would have made this full circle is if I stuck with Wu, I initially wrote down as my favorite character in this book. I initially wrote down Kaladin. That is not my favorite character. As I thought about it more, he's second in this book, which is crazy. We would have had a full circle. Elliot choosing Zeth, Trevor choosing Dalinar, and I would have been choosing Kaladin. Would have been crazy. Kaladin goes on an amazing story this book, learning, getting sent on a mission he doesn't want to go on. I guess that's a common theme for him. But doing that to go with Zeth and going and needing to be Zeth's friend and to help him out when he doesn't want to, but along the way, learning to really be Zeth's friend and sympathize and care for him and all these things. Really great. Really good story. Sure.
Okay, no. Kaladin's whole thing this book was, hey, go help people that need help. What he's been doing for the past four books, the same thing.
But it's a different way.
Correct.
It's not saving people physically.
It's just in the way he's never experienced before, and he's got to do some learning stuff with that. Absolutely. But the core thing behind it is, hey, go help people that need help.
But this is introverted Kaladin, who would much rather go do physical labor to help somebody than to talk about their feelings with them. Sure. You know? Absolutely. So I would consider
that.
Anyways, getting to my actual favorite character this book, after some wow, we've really spent so much time talking about not our favorite characters here.
about how each other are incorrect on their favorite characters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's not your favorite character. Your favorite character was this guy. Anyways, my favorite character in this book is Hoid. My cop favorite out. Character in this book, not a cop out.
I'm really looking forward to this because Hoid does do nothing.
No. Okay, so Hoid in this book locks in. Okay, we've seen Hoid in these previous books just lackadaisical, whimsical, shooting spitball and making fun of everybody. As he does, wit. We've seen wit. And wit is funny and cool and silly. And I've always liked wit. But in this book, we get Hoid, who knows stuff is going down. And the reason I changed my mind is because I was looking back for quotes in this book. And I think majority of the best quotes in this book are from Hoid or conversations with Hoid. We have Hoid talking to Kaladin at the start of the book, probably my favorite scene and sequence in the book, honestly. Incredible, if not favorite, second favorite there. You've got Hoid and Dalinar later in the book, where Hoid, as the reason I'm saying he's locked in this book, is he is getting to the point of his crazy stories. He is providing answers and guiding characters in a fruitful way, which I was not expecting, but he is playing a serious game now, whether or not he is admitting that openly. He probably does to Dalinar at the end of the book, whenever they're talking before he goes up there. But the stories he tells and the ways that he, obviously he's still Hoid and he's still making fun of Kaladin for losing his flute and all these things, but he's getting to points and he's being very intentionally insightful rather than just ridiculous. I think he has some very impactful and very integral scenes to this story. Before it was like, okay, yes, you get your Hoid therapy session and that's cool and cute and good. And we, the reader, are like, what does that really mean? But here he is intentional and really guiding the characters rather than, I don't know what you could classify what he does before, but he is really intentionally guiding them. And I think it's really cool to see this more serious side of Hoid. I don't think we've seen this in another Cosmere book to the same level. And we'll get into the quotes and you'll be like, wow, you know, Hoyt has the best moments actually. So, story-wise, yes. Okay. Hoyt doesn't do the biggest things, but if Trevor's going to pick Damu, then you can't get on to me for
the
biggest things in the story.
You can't pull Damu into this. He's pure and off doing his thing with the Iriali or whatever he's about to do. So I docked a point for characters because of Hoyt, and here's why. Hoyt doesn't lock in enough. He is still hanging out in the tower doing absolutely nothing for 7 days straight prepping for the contest. And like Dalinar and Navani get locked in the spiritual realm, and he's like, oops.
But that's kind of what Hoyt does, right? He's not actually a protagonist. He's not actually there to fight the bad guys. He's just he's the nudge. I'm going to give you a nudge every
once
in a while.
For you and I, correct. Hoyt is not actually supposed to be part of the plot. But in world, I feel like Hoyt would do way more considering of the threat that he's trying to convince everyone else of. Like, he would go to the Shattered Plains and help Sigzil. He would do something besides just talk to people.
I'm saying that the way he talked to people in this book was different and better.
I will grant you that.
And those moments were the best moments in the book, in my opinion, some of. That's why he's my favorite character.
I think you've convinced me it is okay for him to be your favorite.
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, y'all are going to come in here and say, no, he's not your favorite. He's not your favorite, and I'm telling you, he is my favorite, and that's why.
I hate to back up your points with my favorite quote, but that's what's about to happen.
Yes.
So moving into favorite quotes, my two favorite quotes are on the same page in this book. I believe they're in chapter 6, where Kaladin is going to have his meet. Four. Kaladin's going to go have his meeting with Dalinar. And Hoyt's sitting on his red sofa and gives him another flute. And he gives him gives him quite a few pithy lines, and here are two of them. "You know what first drew me to you, Kaladin?" Whit asked. "You did one of the most difficult things a man can do. You gave yourself a second chance." "I took that second chance. Maybe even a third," Kaladin admitted. "But now what? Who am I without the spear? Won't that be exciting to find out?" Whit said. And then just below that, on the same page, Whit says to Kaladin, "A virtue is something that is valuable, even if it gives you nothing. A virtue persists without payment or compensation. Positive thinking is great, vital, useful. But it has to remain so, even if it gets you nothing. Belief, truth, honor. If these exist only to get you something, you've missed the storming point." Both those are pretty self-explanatory, so there you go.
Those are good ones.
That was going to be my quote, but Trevor stole it, for the record.
That's why you do the outline early, Paul, so that you can get the correct quotes in.
Yeah, you're right. First come, first serve. But that led me to another quote, which I am very excited about, and I probably wouldn't have ended up adding had that not happened. It forced me to look for another quote. So I'll go and go into that if that's all right. So I'm going to connect two quotes on opposite ends of the book. My favorite quote is my favorite moment and quote in this book is the pivotal story moments that happen with Kalak. There's a lot that ties into this from the previous books, maybe Words or Rhythm of War and, of course, The Way of Kings, but I'm just talking about in this book. So in I1, where we see Kalak, page 121, I'm going to read a little excerpt here and then flip later into the book. Says when he's being chased, but going to be captured by Felt and the Ghostblood people. Says he'd survived so many things, but this escape felt narrower than the others. He couldn't help thinking that the payment for his frighteningly long life was coming due. Even after all this time, he didn't want to die. He put his back to the door, breathing hard. Should he have gone with them? Eyes closed, he tried to remember the man he'd once been. The hero who had fought for thousands of years. His life seemed a blur, a wash of gray and brown. A fresh painting left out in the storm. These days he felt only panic, indecision, and a crushing darkness. Always nearby, always threatening him. Without Ishar holding some of it back, it would have destroyed him long ago. But he'd survived. He'd survived. The reason that's good and the reason it will tie in is because Kalak, we see Kalak here surviving and remembering back to key times and better times. Then the last pages of the book, page 1328, 1329, you have Kaladin and Kalak talking. Kaladin says, "One more try," Kaladin whispered, "just once more." "Once more," Kalak said, "a final return." "We heal," Kaladin said. "We reclaim ourselves, then we go back to Roshar. This time we win for real. Instead of coming back withered from torture, you'll return refreshed, mended, and we'll see what we can do together. One more try, a final return." Skipping ahead, a tremble went through Kalak. It left warmth and, unfortunately, shame in its wake. He was used to the shame. He'd carried it for millennia. The warmth was new. Taln was back. Taln forgave them. Kalak reached up and took Kaladin's hand. And I think that is a beautiful, fitting connection and story for Kalak. And a beautiful part of this story.
I'll jump into my quotes that I've got. You guys grabbed some really good, really kind of big ones, big thoughts. So I went actually a little smaller and grabbed some little, maybe more off the beaten path ones that I still think are pretty fun that I'm going to take away from this book. The first one is in chapter 110, in one of the many conversations between Kaladin and Nail. Kaladin is, and actually read all the context of this, I think it's one of, he's telling him one of the Hoid stories, I think. Nail responds simply back with, "I do not pay attention to made up stories." And Kaladin's response here is so good. "Pity. They have proven to be some of the most real things in my life." And I think I talked to her a good 3 or 4 minutes on this back when we saw this in chapter 110. So I'm not going to do it again there, but man, that struck a chord with me. Made up stories have been some of the most real things in my life. No question. My other one, even shorter. I didn't even want to put it in here because I didn't want to spoil you guys on what I was about to read. So I'm just going to read it and you guys are going to agree with me that this is the best quote in the whole book. Are you ready? You don't look ready.
I'm ready.
I look skeptical.
You both look skeptical. All right, prepare to be blown away. Ready? "And for the first time in over 4,000 years, the bearer of agonies fought back."
Yeah, it's all right.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's all right. Oh, man. Yeah. I dropped the book when I read that line the first time. It's about Taln, if you didn't read the book and don't know what this is about.
Yeah, if you haven't read this, spoilers for Words of Wind and Truth, by the way, if you're listening and haven't finished the book.
My only other thing I'll say is honorable mention to a lot of other segments of the book, which had some really cool stuff in them, some really interesting themes where the characters are going back and forth on some deep discussions, like what defines us, why do we fight? Are there prices that are not worth paying? All these things had some really good segments, but they never really summed themselves up in a quotable sentence. So it was mm-hmm. tough to, yeah. You know, I can't read a whole page to you, but there are some whole pages in this book that I thought were really good. They're just not quite the throw pillow quotes.
I definitely want to give an honorable mention to Shallan. There's the moments with Shallan forgiving her mother. That What I read, as y'all could tell, was quite long and putting a lot of different pieces together. So I was just sticking it with that one. But if I went and found another, I would do that with that segment and that chapter.
Something else I'll throw in. I thought it was really interesting on the first quote that I read that Kaladin and Wit talk about his second chance all the way back in chapter 4. And then four chapters from the end, two chapters from the end, he names himself Herald of Second Chances. Dawned on me just then. Okay. Anything else that we would like to talk about that we haven't got the chance to, gentlemen?
I think the other notes that I had in the outline we've already covered in various places. So I think I've shared all my thoughts. Quite a few. This is a tough book to talk about, to be honest. We almost kind of wrestled with ourselves and each other through several segments of this. I understand why when I ask people, for the last 9 months, I've been asking people, what's your spoiler-free take on Wind and Truth? And everyone like pauses for a second and they go, well, and then they give me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know now why they did that, because there's a lot to kind of wrestle with on this book. There's a lot to like, and there's definitely a lot that you can zero in on and get a little frustrated with. So I can see now why people got a little faraway look in their eyes every time I asked them that question.
My overall stance on the book, I think, is I liked it more than I thought I would based on those reactions that you're talking about, Elliot. I was expecting some massive thing at the end of the book. Like, for example, my brother-in-law comes up to me about 3 months ago and says, Trevor, I can't believe that Brandon Sanderson. I'm like, hold on, whoa, stop. I'm not done with the book. And he goes, oh, you're not done with the book? I'm like, no. Okay, come back and talk to me when you're done. What? I'm going to go talk to him and ask him what he's talking about, because I really don't know what would be so frustrating, like right at the end of the book. I enjoyed everything that I saw, and there's very few things to like really nitpick on besides Kaladin's page time. But other than that, like there's no like super big like plot twist for the Cosmere at the end. Like maybe the time dilation stuff, if you're other really upset about that.
And time dilation, yeah.
Yeah, but the retribution worked for me, though.
Something, yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would based on those reactions. I was expecting to not like it, but I did. I liked it very much.
I was going to say, a thought that I really want to end with in this book is opening from the time we opened this book to the time we're now closing this book, every time we recorded and had the go-ahead to read more, it was the most eager I've been to pick it up and read what's next. I think that is very, very high praise of this book. We've spent a lot of time picking it apart and talking about maybe quibbles and squabbles about it. But Stormlight still holds that spot of I've got to see what's next, and I can't wait to uncover each stone. And so super exciting still.
Are you kind of frustrated that it still holds that spot after book 5, that you're like super looking forward to book 6?
Once again, I'm coming to terms with that. You know, I think I was initially upset. I'm going through the stages of grief, like what acceptance and whatnot, and I'm starting to move on. But like, for example, whenever we get a Mistborn Era 3, I'm going to be excited to pick that up, and I'm going to be excited to read it. I'm not going to be as excited to pick that up and read it as I am going to be whenever Stormlight 6 is here and we start turning the pages in that book. Stormlight, I guess, kind of holds a special place in my heart. So it's been fun. It's been my favorite overall vibe, story, plot, everything. So that should sing its praise pretty highly. There are things that I don't love, as we've discussed. But overall, it's still quite an engaging story.
I want to wrap up a couple of my thoughts before you close this out here, Trevor. I think I'll say that when all is said and done here with book five of the first era, the first arc of Stormlight, I find myself a little bit disappointed. It was the book I rated the lowest of the five Stormlight books that we've had so far. And that makes me a little bit sad to do that. And it feels a little bit like we could have had a climax that was here. And if you're just listening to us on Spotify or somewhere, my hand is like really high on the screen. Like it could have been here. And what we actually got was here. Is in the middle if you're not watching.
His hand has lowered down the page.
Yep, a little bit lower. So like it had a bit more potential than it actually executed on. It's still a really good book. But in the back of my head, I was hoping for something monumental, something that would be a cornerstone of epic fantasy for decades to come, that we would look at this book and go, oh my goodness, Brandon just blew everything else in the world out of the water. He built everything up across these four books. You have to read 6,000 pages to get there. And it is amazing. And I don't think we got that, sadly.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
What I do think we got was a very, very, very solid entry in the fantasy fiction world. There's a lot of payoff that happens in this book. There's a lot of character development that is really cool. There were a lot of moments that I got a lot out of personally. There were a lot of discussions in this book, a little bit of philosophy, a little bit of dilemma, some tough decisions to be made where I had to sit down and question myself and go, oh man, what would I do there? How would I respond to Nail when he's, you know, throwing my logic down the drain, those kinds of things. And whenever I can finish a book, set it down and go, oh, I think I learned something about myself when reading that book. That's a good book. And this book did do that for me.
I think I have one more thing. I realize we've been talking for a long time, of course, as we do. As Trevor said at the start of this episode, he said, we're just going to share some quick thoughts. Like, that was the biggest lie he said today. Yeah, even bigger than him saying Kaladin did nothing in this book. Sorry, I'm rage baiting him. I think another complaint I have on this book is I'm starting to feel like the Cosmere and the way that this book is going very Cosmere focused is beginning to detract from the Stormlight Archive. I think there were fun nods, and I think the prime examples of the best ways this has been used is through the previous books, through Words of Radiance and Oathbringer, as you might be able to spot some world hoppers and things like that. I don't like that I'm finishing this book and thinking to myself, one, I need to make sure I know everything about the Cosmere before going forward, and two, and more importantly, I don't think I'm now handing the Stormlight Archive I think I'm handing it to way less readers. There's some people who have tried to introduce it to because I know they'd love the story and the big moments. But I don't think, I think it would be much better as essentially a little bit more of an isolated and focused story that we're now not going down that way. We're going down a grander Cosmere inclusion requirement prerequisite reading route. That's my opinion. These are all my opinions, but that's something that I've as we're not talking about what all we're looking at in the future, but that's my quick two cents that I don't love the direction. This was a very pivotal book. I think we talked about that before, of what is the direction for the future of the Cosmere is going to largely be determined by this book. Are we getting more on-ramps, or is everything going to be a prerequisite before this? And I think that's the side we're more so down.
I hear you. I would think I'm more comfortable giving Stormlight to more people than you are. I think the amount of blocks that you're thinking are less important than you're giving them credit for, but I completely understand what you're saying, Paul. I land more towards Elliot's side that my grief with this book, if you will, is simply the lost potential of it, that I can firmly say now that the peak of the Stormlight Archive is at the end of book 3, not at the end of book 5. And that is sad. I mean, it's not that I would tell people to stop by any means. Like, Wind and Truth is still great, but there's less of those huge knockout home runs that were so prevalent in the first 3 Stormlight Archive books. All right, first 4. I'll include Rhythm of War for you two. And there's just less of a huge punch than I assumed Wind and Truth would have. Anything else, gentlemen?
To tack on to some of Paul's questions about where does this take us in the Cosmere, should we talk about what we're doing next?
Yes, I have a schedule for people. So for anyone following along with us, for the next couple weeks, we'll still be bouncing around Wind and Truth. We have a couple things that we want to record. We have a couple things that we want to cover before Emberdark, which will be in probably about a month from this release. So we're planning, I think, 3, maybe 4 episodes between now and Emberdark 1. And they will be mainly Stormlight related, mainly Wind and Truth related, to wrap up the Stormlight Archive as we have it. And then we will be entering Isles of Emberdark. And Elliot will be our leader going into Isles of Emberdark for the first time. He has read it ahead of time and will be doing our chapter splits and laughing at us for knowing nothing.
You all have a new spirit guide through the Cosmere. And I gotta say, I'm already enjoying the power trip of knowing more than you guys do.
Yes, welcome.
Sensational. Sensational. So going forward, you're gonna get you're gonna get more leading questions from me. Hopefully I can keep as straight of a face as Trevor has done for 5 years. You've been darn impressive with the poker face over there.
Thank you. I have a little
less faith in myself. So everybody out there, I need your moral support here as I try to keep a straight face while they predict things accurately or inaccurately. But I'm excited.
For each of my predictions, I will be staring directly at you for a flinch and waiting.
Bring it.
Let's go. Bated breath for it.
Let's go.
All right, we will reconvene next week with some more Wind and Truth content. Thank you for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
Bye-bye now.
My pleasure.